you all for your presentations. The court will take the case under advisement and proceed to case number 3, please. Alan Andre versus Siemens Energy.
That poor girl is a good lawyer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. His father used to be a very good lawyer in New Kenosha.
Good morning, Your Honors. The district court erred in two respects in dismissing this age case on a Rule 50 motion. First, the district court imposed on the plaintiff, Mr. Andre, a burden of the same actor inference. And while the court, in its discussion of the same actor inference in this case, said it was just an aside, it devoted a substantial part of its decision discussing the analysis of the same actor inference and application of Mr. Andre's facts. And it obviously played a part in the court's decision in dismissing this case. The same actor inference applies to a very limited subset of cases, and it simply is not applicable in this case because it is undisputed that the actor who hired Mr. Andre is not the same actor who fired Mr. Andre. The second error by the district court in dismissing this action on Rule 50 motion was its failure to allow the jury to consider Mr. Andre's evidence of pretext. Mr. Andre presented evidence of pretext concerning the Paul report issue and which led ultimately Siemens said to his discharge. From the inception of the call report or call plan imposed on Mr. Andre, it was suspect by the fact that Mr. Andre's younger counterparts were not required to complete a similar call report nor required to make that number of calls. The call report imposed on Mr. Andre the requirement.
Did Mr. Andre lie in his reporting?
He did not, Your Honor.
He did. He was accurate at all times.
He was accurate in his report and testified credibly and unequivocally that he completed the report accurately.
And that he called on all these people that he said he
called. He called on all of those customers.
All of that's I'm talking about.
Therein lies the some issues concerning credibility and what the reasonable expectations of the company and Mr. Andre were.
No, it isn't a reasonable expectation to expect an employee to be truthful.
Absolutely. Mr. Andre stated that, and Mr. Andre was truthful. Mr. Andre received a requirement that he complete a call report and go out and call on 20 customers per week over a 5-week period. Mr. Andre was in a meeting with one of his supervisors, and he was told by his supervisor that, Mr. Andre, if you went out across the street and you sold these computer mice to housewives, you knocked on doors, eventually you'd sell a computer mouse. Mr. Andre questioned that analogy because he's selling very sophisticated control mechanisms to sophisticated customers, and the courting time between himself as a salesperson and those customers is months and sometimes years.
Did he admit that he wasn't up to these new computers?
No. He again testified unequivocally that he, even though they put in writing that he hadn't attended training, he attended it. He had certificates
that he
did it.
Attend it, that he didn't understand.
No, absolutely not. He testified unequivocally that he did understand it and he completed the tasks successfully. Ultimately, Siemens said that wasn't the reason for the discharge and they hung their hat only on the call report issue. With respect to the call reports, Mr. Andre asked his direct supervisor, Mr. Vanek, if he could accompany the industrial salespeople in a separate division of Siemens who already had their foot in the door of these various customers. And this was a typical thing that Mr. Andre did in his experience 30 years as a salesperson, and Mr. Vanek admitted in his deposition was commonplace. However, Mr. Vanek would not allow him those introduction opportunities. Mr. Andre told Mr. Vanek he thought this call report plan was a setup. Mr. Vanek's response was, Alan, the only person who's getting more pressure on this than you is me. And that indicated to Mr. Andre that Mr. Vanek was not the author of this requirement and it was someone else within the company. Mr. Andre being denied the opportunity to go out with the individuals in the industrial division to knock on doors, went back to his office, he reached over to his desk and he picked up the red Wisconsin manufacturer's directory and went through systematically and laid out his call plan for the next 5 weeks, covering a geographic area, targeting companies that may have a need for these products, and went out in the middle of summer in August of that year, and during the five-week period, he called on 102 potential customers. It's undisputed in this case that a cold call is a call that is cold. The person is not expecting the call. The level of contact is expected to be low. The level of actual sales immediately on that call is very low or non-existent. And Mr. Andre did what he was directed by Mr. Sikulski to do, and that was to get Siemens literature out there in the community, the business community, so that people knew about the existence of the company. Mr. Andre did that. He went out on those calls. He attempted to contact the person who was in charge. If they were there and willing to meet with him, he would do that.
And the issue what he told his supervisors that he did. That's what's an issue here. Did he lie when he filed the report?
No. In fact, Mr. Vanek testified unequivocally that Mr. Andre was completely honest in response to questions about how he filled out the report and the purpose of the report.
On August 9th, 1999, was he questioned about the accuracy of it as to the report?
Yes, and Mr. Vanek testified in his deposition that Mr. Andre was completely honest in his response.
Did Mr. Andre admit that he had not been truthful?
He never admitted to the employer.
At trial?
Nor at trial, Your Honor.
At any time?
He stated at no time. He stated unequivocally to the employer and to the jury that he was absolutely truthful in all of the information he completed on his call reports. And he testified, I went through in detail with all of the accounts that the employer challenged him on, and he described in detail.
The court found and emphasized that Simons did not condone the practice of lying on such reports from the evidence adduced at the trial. Is that right?
That Mr. Andre.
That Judge Randa,
yes,
in his findings, made such a finding.
Judge Randa made a finding that the company certainly doesn't condone it. Mr. Andre obviously admits that. The company has a
and
reasonable expectation.
And that did not condone the lying on such reports.
Right. There was no evidence, though, that...
Even though there was no evidence of it, Judge Randa made that finding.
Absolutely.
That's interesting. I've never heard that one before. Okay.
Don't I recall that he said that he listed that he called on people that he hadn't called on?
No.
That were not there, and he said he called on them and they weren't present?
No, he never said he called on them. First of all, he never received any training on the report.
Well, you don't have to have training on the report. You don't have to have training on the report. He said, who did you call on? He says he called on Mr. Jones, and Mr. Jones wasn't there.
No, he never represented that he called on a particular individual and that person wasn't there.
He didn't name names in his report that he called on?
What he did, what he explained to the employer, and what he produced in response to going out on these calls were five file folders with the documentation he collected from each and every one of those customers. One file folder for each of the weeks he went out and made the calls. He went and he presented that to the employer, and being the forever optimistic salesperson...
Did the report say he called on people he didn't meet, he didn't call on?
No. The column says person. Mr. Andre had this living document.
What did he put under person?
Under person, before he went on the calls, if he knew the individual at that company, he put it in. If it was in the manufacturer's directory, he put it in. As that information he discovered became outdated, he changed it. So it was not a matter of him representing to the company that he
In reading this report, reading the report, the company would realize he had not met with that person named?
Given all the circumstances, the number of calls he was making, the fact that he was going out making cold calls, that these individuals with experience should have an understanding that these people are not all going to be available. He's not going to be able to line up meetings and meet with these individuals.
But when you say you met with somebody...
He never said it, nor did he state it.
The report does not indicate that he met with these people?
No. It's under the column person. And Mr. Andre openly told
them... Person what?
Person at this company. The individual identified in the directory. And if the receptionist said, Joe Smith isn't here anymore, we've got a new individual in that position, he'd fill that in and update this living document as time went on. The employer had no interest in even considering that information and the documentary evidence that he presented. Thank you. I'd intended to reserve a minute for rebuttal, but I see I've used that time.
Counsel.
May it please the court, my name is Dana Russ with McGuire Woods and I represent Siemens. Judge Randa correctly dismissed this case on a Rule 50 motion on the grounds that there was no evidence to believe that the reason given by Siemens for terminating Mr. Andre's employment, namely that he'd falsified these call reports, was a pretext for age discrimination. Mr. Andre was a salesman. His job was to call on customers to try to sell Siemens software and hardware products. As part of that, he's supposed to document his sales calls. We have attached as exhibits in our appendix on pages 407, 408, 412, and 11, I believe, copies of these call reports. They're forms which have columns on them which sort of say the date, the name of the company you're calling on, the contact person there. There's been some questions from the bench about that. The contact person there that you're calling on, then the purpose of the call and the results of the call. And it's undisputed that Mr. Andre listed people that he called upon on those reports that he presented to Siemens as his call reports that he never called upon. That's what's undisputed. For instance, one person he listed on July 26, 1998, it's on page 407, Richard Klum, that he called upon, had retired 2 years before that day. Another company he said he called upon, he spoke to an individual there, he admitted that he never did that. All he did was show up and drop some literature off at the door because the door was locked and he never returned again. When Siemens met with him and called him to the carpet on this, Mr. Andre admitted at that time, and he admitted at trial, that he had not called upon these people. There were some other very important admissions as well from Mr. Andre. He admitted that when Siemens called him on the carpet, that's what they were focusing on in the meeting. The discrepancies in his call reports. That's all they cared about. They told him at the time that they thought he was lying. He also admitted at trial that when he was terminated shortly thereafter, that was the same story that Siemens provided. We're firing you for lying on your call reports. There was never any deviation on Siemens' part. As
did he challenge that when he was told that?
No. No. At the time, when he was confronted in the first meeting and 3 weeks later at the termination meeting, he never said this is age discrimination, and he never offered an explanation for the inconsistencies in his call reports. He has offered one now, the explanation you just heard from counsel, that this document was instead of what it said on its face, you're calling on such and such a person on such and such a day, it was a living database instead. That's the argument they're making now. There are other important admissions that were made at trial on cross-examination of Mr. Andre. He admitted that had he indeed been lying, that was a perfectly legitimate reason to fire him. He also admitted that he had no knowledge of younger employees who had done the same thing who were not fired. He also admitted he never heard any age-related comments from any of the decision makers, which has to be unique in the history of age discrimination cases. He also admits that someone reading his report could have easily concluded that he meant when he said he called on such and such a person on such and such a day that that's precisely what he was saying he had done. He also called two co-workers to testify on his defense in his case in chief, Mr. Sismar and Mr. Dusterhoff, but they actually fully supported the company. Both of these witnesses said, look, when I fill out a call report, it means what it says. I called on such and such a person on such and such a day. And also, they both testified that had they been caught lying on their call reports, they would have expected to have been disciplined for it. So all those facts were undisputed, and that's what Judge Randa was facing when he made his decision. And it clearly was the right decision. Now, Mr. Andre's retort is, I wasn't really lying. It was just a big mistake. Nobody explained to me how to do these forms. But that's not the issue. That argument's been made over and over in front of this court, and this court has rejected it over and over, most recently in the Franzoni versus Hart Marks case. In that case, an individual had been reassigned to a job, an elderly employee that required him to be on his feet quite a bit. He left work, went out on a leave of absence, filed a workers' compensation claim. The employer sent out a private investigator to see what was going on. They videotaped the individual walking around without any apparent pain, and they terminated him for lying, for filing a false workers' comp case. The employee defended the brought an age case and defended on the grounds. He said, look, I wasn't lying. And this court concluded in the decision that that's really not the issue. And this is what this court had to say. It said, although Franzoni vigorously disputes the circumstances surrounding his medical leave and that he misrepresented his medical condition, he does not address the relevant question, whether Robinson honestly believed that Franzoni was misrepresenting his medical condition. Franzoni failed to present any evidence that Robinson did not honestly believe he was justified in terminating Franzoni for such reasons, and therefore Franzoni's age discrimination claim fails. And we have precisely the same circumstance here. An employer terminated an employee for dishonesty, and there's no evidence that the employer's reason was just a pretext for discrimination. In other words, here Mr. Andre would have to show not only that he didn't lie in his call reports, but that Siemens knew he didn't lie in his call reports and fired him anyway. Now, there's another decision from this court that's even more recent, and Judge Coffey was on that panel. It's the Coffey versus Standard case, and reached the same result there. And in Coffey, the court pointed out three ways you prove pretext. The first way is you show there's that the reason the company fired the person is factually baseless. Well, Mr. Andre can't do that because he's admitted, once again, that these call reports contain references to meetings that never occurred. So he can't establish that. The second way you establish it is that that was not the actual motivation for the termination. Well, again, Siemens has been consistent from beginning to end as to why they fired Mr. Andre. This is not one of those cases where the employer has a moving target for why it fired the person. You see that sometimes. One explanation is given at the time of termination, another when they do the EEOC charge, and perhaps a third at the time of trial. But Siemens, every step of the way, has been consistent as to why it fired Mr. Andre. And then the final way you show it is that even if the person did it, it's not grounds for firing somebody. And the way you prove that is, again, that there were younger people who weren't in the protected class who did the same thing who weren't fired. And Mr. Andre admitted that this was a legitimate reason for firing him. He also had these two coworkers testify on his behalf who also testified that they would have expected to have been disciplined if they'd done the same thing. So Mr. Andre loses on all these issues. He cannot prove that Siemens grounds was a pretext for discrimination. Now, he devotes most of his brief and most of his argument to events which occurred months before this incident. He says, I was doing well, the company put me on a performance improvement plan, and nobody ever explained it to me, and this is therefore evidence of discrimination. Well, first of all, I think this is irrelevant because that's not why he was fired. And this court has repeatedly held that you should focus on the employer's perception of the employee at the time of the termination, not months or years before, because circumstances can obviously change over time. There are two cases that we did not include in our brief that I would just cite for that proposition. They're Rand versus CF Industries.
What's that cite, please?
Rand versus CF Industries at 42 F3rd, 1139. And Carrizanos versus Navistar at 948 F2nd, 332.
948 F2nd.
F2nd, 332.
Thank you.
And if the court decides to probe beyond this, though, Your Honor, it's still another dead end for Mr. Andre because there were multiple incidents where he was disciplined. Those memos were admitted in evidence during Mr. Andre's case in chief. They show that his technology skills were lacking. He was supposed to sell product with a partner, a distributor called PCC, that said that he was technically incompetent and he was an embarrassment and he needed training. Siemens, rather than fire him, gave him training and gave him three separate chances to show that he had the technical skills to do the job. over the course of 9 or 10 months, and he failed every one of those exams, and he admitted that at trial. And if anything, I think this undermines his age claim rather than supports it, because it shows that Siemens was patient with him, they were lenient with him, they used progressive discipline. In short, if they were out to get him and fire him because of his age, they wouldn't have given him all of these opportunities. The very last point I'd like to make is there's two common law claims, a breach of contract claim and an unjust enrichment claim. He doesn't even really defend the breach of contract claim that was thrown out on summary judgment as opposed to a trial. But on the unjust enrichment claim, there is a distinct difference between unjust enrichment and quantum merit. For whatever reason, in response to our motion for summary judgment, he focused on quantum merit, which he hadn't even pled, rather than unjust enrichment, which he had pled.
Well, they're both quasi-contractual claims.
They are, Your Honor, and they're very similar. But there is a distinction between them. And under Wisconsin law, and the court, I think, properly concluded that he had abandoned that by not even addressing it. There's one other point, though, and that is in his briefs, he makes a great deal of hay out of the fact that Siemens presented him with the release. And he said he was presented with this sort of Hobbesian choice of signing the release and getting his money, or giving up his claim to get the money. And if I could just conclude the thought.
Yeah, just finish.
The release was excluded in evidence by Judge Randa in response to a motion in limine I filed on July 3rd. He has never appealed that ruling. It's not in front of the court, and I think it's very inappropriate for him to raise that now for the first time in light of that. And also, we have the additional reason that he abandoned that argument before the district court as another basis for why the court should uphold the district court's ruling on that point.
Thank you, counsel. Right. Do you want half a minute? I never heard anything like this before.
It is untrue that Mr. Andre never presented the employer with an explanation regarding his calls. He went in with five file folders, presented those to them, and said, here's the documentation. He's an optimistic salesperson, said, I'm excited about some opportunities here. They didn't even want to look at those. With respect to there being no age-related comments, it is rare that an employer admits discriminatory animus. This case does hinge on the credibility of Mr. Andre versus things that may have been said by the employer had we been allowed to go that far in the case. And as stated by United States versus Sheffer, the credibility of the witnesses is a determination that is supposed to be made by the jury.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much,
Your Honor.